This is Actualize Freedom, straight talk on growing clicks and conversions on Amazon FBA from people doing it every day. Now here's your host, digital marketing acrobat, Danny Kenji Carlson.
What's up, guys? Danny Carlson here, host of the Actualize Freedom podcast. And today is a very special episode. We are live on location in Canggu, Bali with... This is kind of an interesting backstory. So Eric Dahl is part of this mastermind group that we do weekly accountability calls. And on one of the calls, I just posted, oh, hey, guys, I'm going to flying to Bali on Thursday. And then Eric's like, no way, I'm also flying to Bali on Thursday. So we both have been hanging out here, actually seeing each other in real life. And Eric has a really interesting backstory. He has a multi-million dollar Amazon business that was built off of pretty much the opposite of what all the gurus tell you to do. He pretty much took everything they did and just flipped it on his head and just went for it. And he's been really successful with it. He also has a very, very interesting take on networking and why that is so interesting. So without further ado, guys, I'd like to present to you Mr. Eric Dahl. How's it going, man?
Good, Dan. How you doing, brother?
Excellent. So maybe let's just dive into like where you're from and why you wanted to move to Bali in the first place.
Yeah, so I'm based out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And about 3.5-4 years ago, I was working, doing a corporate job, doing business development, doing a lot of cold calling, sales and marketing stuff. And I think as a lot of e-commerce entrepreneurs start out, I really was just growing sick and tired of being told what to do, being on someone else's schedule, and not being able to live at the places I wanted. And so that's really what got me started into listening to podcasts and YouTube about different business models until I eventually found this Amazon FBA business model, which made just so much sense to me because I could see the value of the tangible products. I didn't need to build trust with the customer. I didn't need to do anything but create a better widget and present it to the customer base, and then they would react with hopefully sales. And so that's kind of how I got started. I decided to come to Bali most recently just because I've been basically adventuring all over the world. Last year was in South America, and so many friends of mine that are entrepreneurs have said, you know, you really, really got to try Bali. And so I've been here for about a month. I'm going back, unfortunately, in a few days, but it's certainly going to be my home base moving forward because it's just the people, the culture, the food, the entrepreneurial spirit is just unparalleled to anywhere I've been in the world.
Yeah, I mean, healthy food. And I mean, there's just a lot of attractive people in Bali, too, if that is something interesting to you as well, right?
Yeah, I would be lying if I said a huge reason isn't the beautiful models that are just walking around every single area you go.
Definitely a good side benefit. So you started off, you wanted to have something that gave you more time and location freedom and allowed you to do the things that you want to do without actually having to trade your time for money, right? So let's just walk us through this journey because you made some decisions at the start of that business that was just like the opposite of probably what you're hearing on these podcasts and the courses and everything like that, right? So how did you decide that you were going to go against the grain, and like, what are some examples of those decisions?
Yeah, so I started out just absorbing as much content as possible for the first 3 months of my journey. Looking back, I wish I went through a course or two and paid to have that knowledge kind of downloaded into my matrix a little bit quicker without it being all over the place. But if you're just absolutely at the beginning stages of your journey, I highly recommend just spending time, you know, 3-4 hours a day, as much as you can, listening to as many different podcasts like your podcast and a few others, YouTube. And if you're able to buy a course for a grand or $2,000 or whatever it costs you, because saving time in the long run will make you a lot more money. So I started out learning all about the typical Jungle Scout route where they say, okay, make sure you find a product that's within the size of a shoebox, that's under $3, that makes you at least $10. And I heard this over and over and over. And then they have the web apps where they say, okay, put in all the dimensions and it'll spit out all this information. So my first couple of products, I kind of went that route and listened to what everyone said and realized that, yes, I'd have a little bit of success, but it was very short term because everyone's learning the exact same information. And so it's really challenging to differentiate, to stand out from the market, and to find avenues where there's a lot less competition. So what I decided to do was, instead of going undersized, instead of going low price air shipping, instead of going industries that are unregulated, I decided to do the exact opposite. So I solely am in oversized. My cheapest product is about $14 a unit, which goes up to about $100 per unit cost.
And so that's a unit cost. That's not
that's
a retail
unit cost.
Price.
So retail is anywhere from like mid $40 upwards of like close to $300. I'm still kind of figuring out what some of my prices. And so that's kind of the market that I went after. Now, there's a couple of downfalls to this. This is the reason that they don't recommend this to a lot of people is, you know, it takes a lot of capital. You know, there's sea shipping. So that's going to take 3 months and it's going to take a little more headache. It's going to be a lot more difficult for cash flow because of long lead times and also just based on your buying. If you're buying 500 units at $100, you know, that's $50,000 right there. And then it takes a lot longer to come to market from a regulatory standpoint. So I'm in the baby market. So all of my products need to go through rigorous third-party testing, which costs a couple thousand dollars at least, as well as takes an extra few months to get all your T's lined and your I's dotted.
Yeah, and so this is a lot to bite off, right? Like, how much of this did you know before getting into that? Were you aware of all the regulatory and the cash flow hurdles that you really would have to overcome when you started this, or did a lot of it just kind of creep up on you?
Yeah, so it really did creep up on me. And I think that's a great point that you're touching on in terms of not only the amount of capital that it takes, but also just the whole learning curve of regulatory things and the likes of that. So for example, if you're going to go into a product that's, say, $10 a unit, that's and it has a 3 month lead time, and you buy, start off with 500 units, so that's $5,000. Lots of people think, okay, great, I have $5,000, so I can go into this market because I've got $5,000. But that's not exactly the full story, because if you start doing well, you will be overcome with your success. So for example, you start selling the $5,000, you buy $5,000 worth, it's 500 units, and you start selling 10 a day. Now that ends up being 300 a month and 900 in 3 months. And that's you just getting started with a few reviews. So you start seeing it's taking off. You're 3 weeks into your journey, you say, okay, I got to buy more inventory. But now instead of buying 500 units again, I need to buy an additional 1,500 units, and you haven't got any of your money back from Amazon. So now you went in saying you're going to spend $5,000, but you actually need $20,000 just to get the ball rolling with the first two rounds of inventory.
Yeah, and that's something that I personally see so many Amazon sellers who are starting out get caught in that trap. You literally see people who they've invested 100% of their capital into the first round of inventory, and they're like, well, I can't afford any marketing. I can't afford to do anything like this. If it doesn't work, they can't do anything. And even if it did work, they can't afford to reorder the inventory of getting it back in stock. And it honestly blows my mind that more people don't figure this out. But I think, honestly, it probably has a little bit to do with what people are told, right? What do you think about how the gurus are teaching when it comes to how much money it needs to get started?
Yeah, I think it's completely misleading. I think a lot of the big people in the market, you know, the big faces, I'm not going to name any, lots of them are making their money from selling you information, and they're not making their money from selling on Amazon. And so their goal is to get you into their webinar and sell you a course. And lots of times they're going to give you whatever information that you want to hear, you know, maybe make $1 million in 6 months. Well, you know, no, that's not how it works. Even if you have success, like I have a multi-million dollar company on paper in sales, say the profit's a few hundred thousand dollars, but at the end of the day, tell that to my bank account because I have $0 cash in the bank because I'm completely leveraged and buying more inventory, long lead times. And so if you want to expand the business, it really, really takes a lot of cash. And so you need to be very cognizant of what your goals are when you're getting into a product. If you're super, super early stage, say you just got the information, you're just going to launch your first product, and it's going to be a cheap $2, $3 product at 500 units, whatever it may be, I think that's great. But I don't think you need to think of it as, you know, I'm going to make a whole bunch of money off of this product. I think you need to think of it the same as if you're buying a course. You know, you're going to risk that $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 just so you can expedite that learning curve. So you can start making mistakes. So you can start being in the Amazon platform and learning all the little subtleties that come along with that. So if you're just starting out, I say get in the game as fast as you can, which is a great thing that I think these gurus preach is take action. And I 100% agree with that. Just make sure that you have the lens of I'm doing this from a learning standpoint, not necessarily this is going to be my be all end all. I think it's just the first step.
Absolutely. Totally agree with everything there. So maybe can you give an example of one of these higher priced products? Like what do the numbers actually look like the money you set aside to get this product up and launched? Like what kind of budget is it going to take? Like a real number example?
Yeah. So I'll kind of back up even one step further and give you my base strategy for finding these higher priced, not as FBA heavy competition. So I think most of the gurus also would say, at least when I was learning back 3-4 years ago, that what you want to do is find products that are high in FBA sellers. So that means if you're using Jungle Scout or whatever tool, it's fulfilled by a third party, fulfilled by Amazon, but from a third party seller. Now, I went the opposite route and I said, okay, I'm going to find all the products that are not from FBA sellers, that are all from AMZ. And so what AMZ means essentially is Amazon is either buying wholesale those products from real big brands and reselling them usually at a discounted rate on their website, or it's something like Amazon Basics. So I went and focused. Those guys aren't focusing on pay-per-click, on headline ads, on things like that. So I can go into a lot of markets that FBA sellers aren't doing and have a more optimized listing, really focus on my reviews, focus on the pay-per-click and the other types of advertising on Amazon that they're not doing. So that's like my mental state going into product research. Now, from there, I'm looking at, personally, I have access to Inc. Capital now, and so I have the ability to go into markets that maybe are the first round of inventory is $30,000 or $40,000, knowing that the second round is going to be an additional $60,000. So I'm going at, I'm seeing on Jungle Scout or whatever that there's the potential to do $50,000 a month in sales on a product. And then from there, I'm going in and we'll just give some numbers as kind of loop back to where you were coming from. So I have a product that's around $90 landed. And so
landed cost. So can you break down the landed cost for people? Just
right.
Who are
yeah.
Not familiar?
So for me, the landed cost is the total cost that it takes from China all the way into Amazon's warehouse. So that includes my tariffs, that includes sea shipping, that includes any packing fees before it's in Amazon. So I get all my stuff palletized at a third-party logistics company. So it includes all of those fees. So just to give like a ballpark, I'll buy it from the manufacturer for $80. I'll have it landed in Amazon for a total of $90. And then my FBA fees are, or like fees that Amazon is taking for packing and fulfilling it, we'll say is another $25. So that brings us at, you know, $115. And then they're going to take a 15% referral fee as a thank you very much for coming to Amazon and selecting your product. And so I would have, to make it easy, a $300 price point. So the referral fee is $45, the FBA is $25, so we're at $70 plus $90, so that's $160, and that'll leave me, say, $140 margin. Now, on a $90 product upfront cost, $140 margin is somewhere around 150% ROI. So you take the margin at the end, you divide that by the cost of goods sold, and that gives you the ROI and a percentage, which is how much money are you going to get for every dollar you put in. Every unit sale, when I put in $1, I get $1.50 back. So that's, I'm looking for at least 100% ROI with that metric. And the reason for that is if you go under 100% ROI, it means in order to double your inventory, you need to add more capital. And so that's not a great thing. In addition, I think some people are nervous to go into markets where they're the highest price point. And I went with the strategy of all of my products are in the top 5, 10% of pricing, sometimes the top 1% of most expensive products in the market. I'm competing against Amazon Basics. I'm competing against really big companies that have low cost of goods sold and they're selling really cheap on Amazon. And so I need to be at that high price point, but the way that I justify it is I make sure I have a whole bunch of additional features, bonuses, and other things that the customer can receive so that they can justify that value.
Yeah, so like an example that you showed me the other night is I saw a CAD drawing that you had set up for a proprietary product, right? You had a brand new product that you created a custom design for, and you're sending this off to manufacturers to create like a custom product. It's not just some random one going through an Alibaba catalog, right?
Yeah, exactly. So my mindset is always find the best products on the market that currently exist and read the reviews, see what people really, really want, and then find a way to add that value. So CAD's one example where I'm getting the design completely remade. I usually have a couple of ideas that I give to a 3D designer on Upwork. I paid, I think, only $350 to have that design created, and then I can start getting quotations from different people. The way that I get quotations is I went and I hired 5 product sourcing agents on Upwork, and I gave them the exact same instructions, and some were $40 an hour, some were $20 an hour, some were a percentage of your sales or a percentage of the first purchase. And I just went, okay, guys, show me what you got. And it became very clear that I had one product sourcing agent that really knew how to get the best prices. So just another side tip is if you're going to go launch a product, make sure you have a product sourcing agent to look and see if they can get you a better deal. Because you might pay $300 right now, but they might save you a dollar. And you'll save that money over and over and over again.
Yeah, and real quick, too, for product sourcing agents, I know a question people ask all the time is, you know, how much should you pay them? Should you pay them percentage or one-time fee? What is your preference on that?
I like to pay them on an hourly rate. This allows them to take their time. I don't really care if they overcharge me $50, $150, you know, for one product. Like, I think it'll on normal take about 10 to 15 hours to find a pretty basic product. And so my justification is, say I, like the lady I ended up working with is $20 an hour. So we'll say it takes her 15 hours. That's $300 one time. And then I have the absolute best factory at the best price. Whereas I've used people in the past and they give you a quotation after they take their cut. And so you're like, okay. And they might be taking 10 or 15% of that cost price. So in the long term, it really costs you a lot of money, even though it saves you $300 in the beginning.
Yeah, because who knows, maybe they have an arrangement with the manufacturer, right, where they're getting a kickback from the manufacturer. So, like, you think you're saving a bunch of money, but in reality, you're probably getting screwed, right? So another thing that you've done that's really contrary to what the gurus say is going with big, oversized items, right? So what I'm curious to hear from you is how did you overcome the shipping costs and calculating that into your fees and everything like that? Because I know a lot of sellers, they hear this advice from people that's really smart, like get into the oversized items because that's the opposite of what everyone else is doing. But then they quickly realize that it's very difficult to make the numbers work with the shipping. So is there anything special you're doing there?
Well, the first thing is it's absolutely imperative that you're doing sea shipping. And it's can be a pain in the butt, and it's so frustrating when you put in a big order and you're just waiting for 3 months in order to start selling your inventory. But it's something that is a must. And currently what I'm doing is I'm mostly shipping in 40-foot or 45-foot containers now. And so I can – and that sometimes that's only 500 units for some of these products. But that's okay because I know what the price of a 40-foot container is. And I have now have a warehouse. I found some third-party logistics companies that have relatively cheap warehousing fees. So I'll pull it in, say, we'll just say into the California port. We'll put it on a truck for 2 or 3 hours to get it out of that main port where the storage rates are a little bit cheaper, and then have it stored there and ship in 2 or 3 months of inventory in at a time into Amazon.
Yeah, so I mean, there's really no getting around just doing big bulk sea shipment loads, right? And that's where the big barrier to entry, the large amount of capital investment, comes in, which is, you know, it's a great strategy. I mean, obviously it totally works, but yeah, obviously you need the money to actually get that started, which is why it's so accessible to people. So it's a good thing, but depending on your resources, also a bad thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And when I was just getting started in oversized, I wasn't doing full 20-foot containers even. It would just be partial containers. But the shipping charges, it's like night and day. I think on average, maybe it would cost $1 per unit, but from doing a partial shipment load versus if I was to airship it, it would be like $6. So it's crazy cost savings. And where it comes down to is having the unit margin to be able to take that hit because you believe that you can have success at a certain price point. Another great thing about having this high unit margin, when I'm saying unit margin, I'm saying, okay, say you have 100% ROI, so it costs you $100 for the product up front, you make $100 margin, that's $100 unit margin. Now, if I do pay-per-click and my cost per click is only 50 cents and my conversion rate's pretty normal, you know, I'm not actually going from 100% ROI to like 30%, whereas lots of these small products is you have a $10 margin, 5 clicks later, you're not making any money. But with these products, I have a lot of space to break down my margin, a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there for advertising, which is another huge benefit I think people don't totally look into. Now, back to your point about capital investment, it really does take quite a bit of money. I was fortunate that I had some relationships with people that allowed me to I got some investors that allowed me to really scale this business, personal family, friends, and family. But without that, it would have been a real, real challenge, which is also why I love it, because it's such a great barrier to entry in comparison to just the Me Too products that lots of people are pushing out.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So for people out there who maybe don't have a whole lot of money, they don't have the rich uncle or something like that, what might you recommend as a strategy to get capital to grow a business? Like I certainly wouldn't recommend anyone go max out their credit cards. I mean, we've all met guys who have done it and it's worked out, but maybe not the best strategy. What are some strategies that you and maybe your other million-dollar seller friends have used to raise the capital for this kind of stuff?
I think it comes down to two things. One person's looking for money and one person's looking for their money to make money. So those relationships exist everywhere. So if you don't have a lot of money right now, that I don't think it's a great excuse, because I know tons of guys that came in with almost nothing. And what they did is they learned the skills, you know, they tested out the markets with a couple products. Then they created a business plan that breaks down the numbers, breaks down how they're going to differentiate the products. They find the suppliers, they find the cost, they know their numbers, they have all the knowledge. And when you have all the knowledge, people are willing to take some chances on you. When you're structured, when you're organized, and you say, look, I want to run with this thing. Maybe you get them to put in $100,000 and you do all the operations and you earn up to 50% based on performance. There's a lot of different structures for doing it. Generally, the banks aren't going to give you money until you're already really pushing through inventory. But if you are having success and you want to scale it, that success shows to people. People don't realize, like, if you know the top, if you're an expert, if you know the top 10 if you're in the top 10% of knowledge. And the top 10% of knowledge for Amazon is you don't really even need to know that much. So it's surprising what people will give money for. I have a friend right now who's working with private equity firms, and they just hired a whole bunch of people that don't even know what they're talking about. They've never worked in Amazon, and they're buying up all these Amazon businesses and trying to scale them. They have no idea what they're doing. So one option could even be trying to find these private equity firms and say, hey, listen, I don't have a ton of experience, but I have a lot of Amazon knowledge, and I can prove it. And here's some products I think that you could go into. And maybe you can get some funding for that, or maybe you can join a team and start building a little bit of equity. There is a lot of ways, but it does certainly make it a lot more challenging when you're not coming to the table with some cash.
But I love what you just said right there, because that perfectly embodies the mindset that I think people really need to have success with a real business like this, right? It's totally different from the mindset that a lot of these course gurus are trying to push, like, here, take your $2,000, take your $5,000 and make a little bit of side money, or make $50,000 a month within the first 3 months. You know, it's not the same mindset as getting all your ducks in a row, really knowing your numbers, knowing your market, knowing it just inside and out, and like how you're going to differentiate from competitors and everything like that. If you can prepare to the point where you could go pitch an investor and convince them to give you money, that's probably the mindset and where you should be if you're, whether or not you're getting investment. You probably should just get to that level anyway. So I love what you just said right there.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And on the contrary, I do have friends that built up, say, $15,000, which is a lot of money, and have had great success, and with an oversized product. And the way that they're doing it is they're not looking for a $50,000 a month product. They're looking for one that maybe does $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 a month at 4 sales a day. And that opportunity is certainly out there. And so if you have just some money and you want to take a couple risks, I really recommend when you're launching to just get to market fast, learn a little bit if you can risk a little bit of money. And then as soon as you do that, find 2 or 3 products, hopefully from the same factory, and launch them all. And personally, I like that shotgun approach, because I recently went through a launch, this is kind of off topic from pricing, but where I had 3 products. They each cost me about $30,000 up front, and one of them just absolutely blew up, sold out in 2 weeks. One of them did pretty good, 3-4 units a day, and one of them was just a complete dud. And that winning product and that like mediocre product is going to pay for my dud 100 times over, month after month after month. And so I think what a lot of people do is they go, if they have $10,000, they go all in with $10,000. If you got $10,000, maybe the option is, you know, a couple cheap products to start and just learn the market. But don't put all your eggs in one basket, particularly before you have the knowledge and you really have the new perspective and awareness of what it takes to be successful on Amazon.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good practical advice, because everyone's in different scenarios. You know, not everyone is going to be comfortable going to get investment for their business. Not everyone is going to be comfortable even on their first shot. If they did have $20,000, it's maybe not a good idea to invest $20,000 your first product the first time around, right? Learning the ropes and actually getting going in that. Well, Eric, this has been really, really insightful, and I hope people are really listening to the real details of what you're saying, like, because it's totally the opposite of what most people have been listening to and what most people have been hearing. Just the mindset of actually building a real business, which brings me to my last question that I'm going to go into here. What are you currently doing and have been putting effort into to really grow this into a full-fledged business that is not just an Amazon business, just perpetually launching products and that's it pretty much?
Yeah, so I've been doing a couple of things. I recently, well, I think it's not recent anymore, 8 months ago, sold one of my FBA businesses in kitchen. My main company is in baby, and so I've just been continually finding new products, launching them, and creating big differentiators in that business. I recently opened up a Shopify store where I'll be doing Google AdWords, Facebook retargeting, and I've done some influencer marketing. But I really recommend to get your feet wet in Amazon before, like, if you have 1 or 2 products that are doing decently well on Amazon, my belief is to continue adding products until you have a big enough line that say you only get 20%. Say you get 20% of your sales off of Amazon. That's incredible if you have an Amazon business. But 20% of one product is not that great, and it's going to take you a whole new learning curve. Whether you could add a second product, double your business. Now, once you have five products, now you look at, okay, 20% ends up being like launching another product. So maybe that's worth it. But I think some people get too early on, get stuck in doing too many things like Facebook ads and Instagram and Pinterest, and they're just doing all this stuff before they even really have the roots in their brand. And so I just would start calling my business, my company a brand. And so now I'm doing all those things, including Pinterest and whatnot. And then over the next, about a month ago, I just purchased a new business, which is completely outside of Amazon, which is in a drop shipping within the United States model. And so I think for me moving forward, it's going to be all about buying, flipping businesses and either selling them or just continuing with the cash flow.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's allowed you to come to beautiful places like this, still get some awesome work done, enjoy the beach and the great entrepreneurial community out here, right? So, Eric, man, it's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure here. What are your final parting words? Let's say that there's an Amazon seller who just really resonated with everything that you just said there, and they realize they want to go this route, and they want to overcome all the hurdles of going after the high-priced products, the big investment, the oversized and everything like that. What would be your advice that you would give that person knowing everything you know now?
I would say just – sounds so cliche, but just do it. Like so many people – I have a friend who's came to China with me. You know, he's learned about Amazon for 2 years. He knows more about Amazon than a lot of people that have products on Amazon. But he never actually pulled the trigger. And so I was just starting out when he was – I was just early on when he was learning about it. And the big difference has been I've taken that step and taken action. So that's the one great thing about gurus is they're pushing take action, and I completely agree with that.
Hell yeah, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on here. We're going to go out and grab a bite to eat here with a bunch of other Amazon entrepreneurial friends. But thanks for tuning in, guys. If you guys want to see the show notes here, go to kenjiroy.com/blog. And Eric, is there a place where people can find you online?
Actually, not really. My Instagram's Eric Dahl, ericdahl, and feel free to add me on Facebook or add me on Instagram and send me a message. I'm always happy to help people.
Hell yeah. Well, until next time, guys, take care.
For show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, visit kenjiroy.com.